BFFT. Now, built by High Caliber Millwrights, in for John Canzano, here's Jude and Newby and Stephen Vaughn with the Ball Faced Truth.
That's right. Welcome in. Beautiful Friday out there. Jude and Newby, Stephen Vaughn, in for Canzano on the Bald Faced Truth. John back in the chair next week. 1 hour edition of the show leading into the Sweet 16 yet again. Four games down, four games to go. Had the exciting finish in Arkansas, Texas Tech last night. Some crazy action. Cooper Flagg dominant with Duke in a big win over Arizona. They are on to the Elite Eight. Shocking NBA firing today that we'll get to. Deion Sanders gets the bag for just a little bit under Dan Lanning money. Reaction to that and everything in between. But four games tonight starting at 4 o'clock. Ole Miss, Michigan State just past the top of the hour. Michigan State -3.5. Kentucky, Tennessee round 3. Tennessee -4.5. Michigan, Auburn. That's Auburn -8.5, and Purdue, Houston. Houston also -8.5 in what could be just an absolute rock fight of a game. Certainly the lowest total on the board going into this one. What's up, Steven? How you doing, my man?
I'm doing well, Judah. Yeah, last night, some good college basketball games. Well, I guess there's one really good one between Arkansas and Texas Tech there at the end. Arizona made a nice comeback in the second half. You talk about Cooper Flagg having a great game. I feel kind of bad for Caleb Love. Like, Caleb Love was awesome last night.
He was really good. Yeah.
And we're not going to talk about it because Arizona ends up losing and Cooper Flagg does something in history that isn't done very often in the NCAA tournament. But Caleb Love was awesome last night and really willed that team back into the game. So I thought it was a fun night last night in basketball. And then, some adventurous stuff today in the NBA and college football. It's a lot of fun right now.
Amazing. Yeah, just a very busy day that we'll get to all of it. We gave our picks on the Sweet 16 games last night. I got all of my, I went 3-1 with my outright picks only because, you know, Texas Tech, they didn't cover, but they came back to get the win. And Coach Cal becomes a meme and blowing the big lead, 16-point lead with 10 minutes to go. BYU in the Final Four was my big swing. Steven, did you watch this game? This was, I tweeted it. I halfway was joking, but not really. That should be the NBA All-Star game. Have Alabama play BYU because the pace and the three-point attempts from both sides were so, so entertaining to watch. And Alabama, of course, setting records with how many they made. I think they made 25 three-pointers last night. That's a new record.
Yeah, it's one of those things where there was nothing BYU was going to do. I mean, I didn't think BYU played terrible. Now, defensively, they weren't very good, but I don't think that they played terrible.
They didn't make their threes, though. That was the thing.
Just not at the same pace that Alabama. But when you score about 90 points, you know, they're in the 80s, like mid to high 80s, like you have a chance to win that game. You just don't expect to give up 110 or whatever it was.
blew out the total, which was already high to begin with, but it was over 200 points.
It's insane. Yeah. And sometimes that happens. And we talk about in March, if you get hot, you can just ride this out. And that's what Ole Miss has done the first two games. They have shot the lights out of the basketball. And so I think if they keep shooting like they are, they're going to beat Michigan State tonight. So it's just one of those things where Alabama got on one and could not miss and was playing really good offense as they do. And just tough for BYU. And that leads to a really fun matchup between Alabama and Duke. If I'm the Dukies, I'd be a little nervous on that one, man, because Duke defense wasn't very good either. Arizona got, right around the 90s. Like that, I think that's going to be another high scoring game between those two teams.
Huge. Yeah. 193, the final in Duke, Arizona. Cooper Flagg, 30 points, 6 rebounds, 7 assists last night. If there was any doubt that he was going to be the number one overall pick, you can erase those doubts. Though, Steven, I guess technically, he can come back if he wants to, but given the fact that technically he still would be in high school right about now if he hadn't left early, this is a remarkable, remarkable talent. Meanwhile, the Trailblazers in there, you know, they eschew the tank, the outright tank, but now I'm wondering if they should just go back and try to do it again. Wow. Now, the benefits from tanking are slim to none. Right now, Portland, after losing again last night, we'll talk about that effort. They are tied with San Antonio in terms of being eighth worst or ninth worst in the league in standings. San Antonio has played two fewer games than Portland. So San Antonio's got some games to play down the stretch, including a game against the Blazers next week. But right now, the Blazers, the best slash worst that they could do would be eighth in the overall league standings. And, you know, if you're breaking that down into percentage points in the lottery, it's really pretty marginal. 6% chance at the number one overall pick if you finish eighth, and 4.5%. So 1.5% points between eighth and ninth. And that's assuming that you don't tie between the two teams. But Cooper Flagg, a remarkable, remarkable player. He will, in all likelihood, be the number one pick in the upcoming NBA draft. But he's still playing his college ball, right? They're going to the Elite Eight, and that one's going to be a fun game. Probably a pretty offensive game between Duke and Alabama coming up this weekend. And then we also get the word that the Memphis Grizzlies make a move at head coach, and they fire Taylor Jenkins. This is incredibly surprising on the face of it. I mean, this is a guy that's been one of the more successful coaches in the league since he became the head coach at Memphis in 2019. That was also the first year Ja Morant was playing in Memphis. Ja wins Rookie of the Year after being the number two overall pick behind Zion. And imagine that, but you fast forward 6 years, Taylor Jenkins was already the fifth longest tenured head coach in the league, and he had just taken over in 2019. I mean, the only coaches to be at their jobs for longer than Taylor Jenkins were Mike Malone in Denver, Eric Spoelstra in Miami, Greg Popovich in San Antonio, and there's one more that I'm blanking on too, but that is a short list, and they are all teams that had won championships, including Mike Malone in Denver. So this guy is fifth longest tenured head coach in the league. He gets shown the door with 9 games left to go, essentially, in the regular season, and his team at 44-29, tied for fourth in the Western Conference standings with the Lakers. The front office in Memphis forced him to make a bunch of coaching staff changes in the offseason. There's pretty much a bunch of accusations that he lost the locker room. And he's doing it all with a coaching staff that he didn't really want. And the two coaching hires that he still had on his staff from the year before, they got fired today as well. 40 years old. And the guy was the fifth longest tenured head coach in the league. And now he's on the market. And Stephen, my question now is, how does this impact, if at all, the Trailblazers' approach to their head coach position in the future? Obviously, Chauncey Billups is on the last guaranteed year of his contract. He's in the fourth year of his deal, and the 5-year contract that he signed originally, that fifth year is a team option. Is he a lame coach walking? Has he earned himself a conversation about an extension? And if you're Joe Cronin, Mike Schmitz and company, does Taylor Jenkins becoming available impact the conversations you're having behind closed doors about who you want the head coach of your roster to be for the foreseeable future? What do you think?
I don't think that it necessarily changes the Blazers' thought process, because while this is shocking, yes, I think you hit on a lot of things about it. Is the team has, by all reports, kind of quit on the coach. And that happens in the NBA. They are fifth in the Western Conference. They also haven't beat a team with a winning record since February 2nd. So they've been losing a lot of games to good teams. Like, they're beating the really bad teams, but they're not beating good teams. And so I do think that there's more to this story than just they're going to fire him because they don't like him. It has to be player-driven. It has to be ownership-driven. It has to be the general manager-driven. It has to be something, because you just don't fire a guy who's that young and has been led his team to that much success. I also think that there are coaches in the NBA, and Taylor Jenkins may be one of these type of coaches, that coaches younger teams way better, and teams that aren't expected a lot out of to really be better than what you're supposed to be. Because remember when he had the job and they drafted Ja Morant, they had the second pick in the draft. They were really bad when they got Ja Morant. That's the reason they got him. They were really bad. And then Taylor Jenkins led them, and Ja led them to, you know, the play-in into that COVID year against the Blazers to have a chance to get into the playoffs. They didn't get it. The Blazers got it in that first ever 8-9 matchup. but they were expected nothing out of them, and they overdid their expectations. So I think there's a little bit of that to it as well, that the Grizzlies are looking to make a move to take that next step, because it did seem flat at this point the last couple of months for Memphis. And I think it also, they're going to have to reevaluate what they want to do with Ja Morant. It's also, it's just kind of weird, Judah. It is weird, but it makes sense to me, because they weren't going to go anywhere with this roster right now, and I don't think they were going to go with Taylor Jenkins. But what it does scream to me is that they are going to do basically kind of what the Seahawks did and choose their staff over the players, because it seems like to me Ja's going to be out at this point. Like, I've heard from people that they expect Ja to be traded. They're kind of going with, like, you know what, we can win with the team. We don't need the coach. Like, we can put our guys in there, build our roster, and we don't need the star player around him. That's what it screams to me with this Taylor Jenkins move. So I think that's the next step, is Ja traded this offseason? And if so, like, what is Memphis going to do after that? Are they just going to go with their, you know, the roster of a team, or are they going to try to, you know, replace him with someone else? I don't know, but Taylor Jenkins is a better coach than Chauncey, but I don't think that it's going to change the Blazers' mind in any way, because I don't know that Taylor Jenkins would want to come to Portland, first of all, but he would be a good fit here, because it's one of those teams where it's a young team that might actually listen.
Better fit than Chauncey? Or is the fact that Chauncey's been with this team 4 years, yeah, does that give him the inside track? Like, it's fascinating to me. These are two completely different backgrounds.
Right.
I mean, Chauncey's a basketball Hall of Famer. Jenkins, 40 years old, but he's been doing this for a while.
He's an NBA lifer, yeah.
He didn't play college basketball.
No, and that's the thing.
He just went right from the Spurs staff through the D-League. Then he joined Budenholzer, Atlanta, Milwaukee, and then got the Memphis job here, and has done a really good job. And by the way, losing the locker room, number one, I don't know that I trust that that's entirely true. And even if it is, does that preclude a guy from being in consideration for future jobs? Or, as you point out, that kind of happens over time in the NBA. You could argue that's what happened with Stotts in Portland to a degree.
100% that's what happened with Stotts in Portland. They were tired of him. He was tired of them. That happened to Nate McMillan as well. Like, he completely lost the locker room after winning a lot of games. That happened to Frank Vogel after winning a championship with the Lakers. They got tired of him after a year because they weren't doing very well, so they fired him. That just happens in the NBA, and that's one another reason why people don't like the NBA, because these players have a lot of egos and they have all the power. If they don't like you, they're going to get you out. It does not preclude Taylor Jenkins from getting another job. That guy will get another job somewhere. I think
if he wants it, he'll get a job next year.
Yes, 100%. And I think it would be with a younger team that probably doesn't have a lot of expectations. That's why I think almost...
I wonder who that sounds like.
But you talk about Portland. I don't know that it's the Blazers. The Blazers have outperformed expectations. They were one of the first three teams to go over their win total this season.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I don't know that Portland's necessarily the perfect fit for them. They already have exceeded expectations with Chauncey Billups this season.
Mm-hmm.
So if you throw Taylor Jenkins in there, what are they going to be... 35-30? I don't think so. Like, maybe, but maybe not.
Well, and it brings into focus, what's the point, right? What's the direction? What's the goal? Like, if you're Joe Cronin, Steven, what do you want your timeline to be competing for championships? Do you have a timeline to compete for championships? Is that even a thought that you have right now? Like, what is the long-term process and goals for a guy like Joe Cronin right now? And does he even look at his own situation in Portland and wonder how long he has left? Does he wonder, does this franchise get sold to new ownership at any point, right? I mean, that's out of his control, but we're seeing the Celtics just go up, right, for $6.1 billion, and we'll see if the NBA approves that. Looks like there's some there's some things for the NBA to sort out. As Adam Silver said, we're still digesting that one. There's expansion that the league is working through, whether or not they want to expand in Europe more than they want to expand in, like, Seattle and Vegas is something to weigh out. And the media deal that they've just signed, like, what does that actually look like as it kind of filters on down? Found it interesting. Trailblazers, this came out a while ago, but they are the 22nd out of 30 most valuable franchises in the NBA, $3.65 billion, I think, according to CNBC's latest turnouts from about a month ago or so. And that's kind of, you know, hanging over the franchise as well, that big picture thing. But if it's up to Joe Cronin and Joe Cronin alone, Steven, and maybe Mike Schmidt's a little bit, because I think Mike, at least his player development and identification of talent is pretty awesome right now. So that guy's involved in the conversation to some degree. But do you think that it fits the franchise's trajectory best to keep letting Chauncey coach this team and get that extension for another 3 to 4 years? Or do you think this is a natural off-ramp And if it's not Taylor Jenkins, do they still consider other outside potential to coach this team even next year? I mean, the Blazers are the ones that hold the cards right now.
Yeah, I think the Blazers are in a spot where, like you said, they hold all the cards. They hold all the power. For me, I do think that they'll give Chauncey another year. I think Chauncey has probably earned it by outperforming expectations a little bit, even though, you know, he was part of the reasons why expectations were so low going into the season. But now he's outperformed that, and he has related to all the players, especially the young players. You listen to all the players talk about it. You listen to everybody talk about Chauncey. They all love the guy. Like, they all think he's a great coach, and they all want to play hard for him. And Chauncey has done some things this season, Judah, that have really raised my eyebrows and say, okay, like, this guy, sometimes he gets it. Like, benching Shaedon Sharpe, I didn't like the decision, but Shaden's been a better defender since he benched him. The reason he benched him is because he even said it publicly. He said, he's been bad on defense, so I'm not going to play that guy. And Shaden's been a lot better now that he's been in the starting lineup. I think Scoot Henderson, same thing. You've seen the growth out of him. If you're asking me straight up who's a better coach, Taylor Jenkins or Chauncey Billups, it's Taylor Jenkins. He has more
proof. Hard to argue that, right?
No, you can't argue that, but I will say, I don't know how much better the Blazers are if you put Taylor Jenkins in with this roster over Chauncey Billups. Maybe a game or two, but I also think...
But that's over 1 year, right? I'm saying like a five-year sample size. Who would you rather bet on with this team?
Right.
I mean, I think it's a conversation. I'm leaning Chauncey myself, but that's partly because I've seen it with Chauncey over the back half of this season and how good the defense has been, and I don't know entirely if, you know... They would be, plus you get to a point, are you alienating a little bit of your own locker room if you swap out, like, has the coach garnered enough, right, you know, equity with his own locker room that you would disrupt that chemistry if you brought in a new face, a new voice?
That's the only reason I hesitate to say Taylor Jenkins is the right answer, is because the guys have really gravitated to Chauncey, and it doesn't seem like they are tired of him all. It seems like they are only respecting him and loving playing for him even more than they have the last couple seasons.
Well, let me ask you a little bit about that, because I got to figure out how many of these guys are going to be on this team next year and after that. And really the big names that come to mind are one, DeAndre Ayton. He's got 1 year left on his contract at $35 million, essentially. Two is Anfernee Simons, who has 1 year left on his contract going into next season. And can't remember exactly the number that he's making right now.
It's about $25
million. Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. And next year it will be 27.6. Shaedon Sharpe's entering the last year of his contract at $8.4 million. Robert Williams, Matisse Thybulle are also, you know, last year of their contracts next year. Ayton, Simons, Sharpe, how many of those guys, which of those guys are still around for the following year, for 2 years from now, for 3 years from now, and how much of that, you know, roster build influences your coaching hire here?
Well, Shaedon Sharpe's the most likely to stay, and when he signs a contract extension with the Blazers, people are going to be alarmed at how much money he makes, because he's going to make a ton of money for being very unproven because of just the skills and the potential he has shown. That's how the NBA works. I mean, Patrick Williams on the Bulls doesn't even average 10 points a game, yet he got like $100 million. Shaedon Sharpe is much better player than he is. Shaedon's going to get a huge deal, but Shaedon's going to be the one that you're keeping. DeAndre Ayton, I would think if he wants to come back as a minimal role guy, as a role player behind Donovan Clingan, that's fine. But Clingan's clearly the future at center. Anfernee Simons, there's been reports today actually coming out that there are lots of teams that are interested in trading for Anfernee Simons in the offseason, but, you know, whether it's the Heat or the Magic. But there is some chatter around that, and I've heard the same thing, but I've heard that years going back, and nothing's ever happened. So.
Right.
We'll see. I don't think that Anfernee Simons is part of this future. I think it's Shaedon Sharpe and Scoot in the backcourt. And we'll see, man. That's why I think Chauncey is going to get another year to be allowed to coach this team, because of the growth that Shaedon took this year and the growth that Scoot took this year. Because those are the two guys you're hoping that turn into a star. Denny's great. Tumani's great. But those are the guys that you're hoping, okay, can turn into a potential all-star. And Chauncey has actually gotten through to them and shown improvement this past season.
You say Ayton would come back as a role player next year?
If he wants, I'm guessing, I'm saying if he wants to. Like, I don't know that he would want to, but
that's expensive.
That would be his role. He's not going to make that much money on the open market.
Oh, you mean after next year?
Right.
Or
right.
2 years from now?
Right, yes. When he's a free agent, yeah.
He's only like 26 still. It's crazy.
Yeah, his game just doesn't fit anymore, just for how it is. And Klingon's a much better rim protector and defender, so they're going to roll with that.
Your guess on how serious Joe Cronin, Mike Schmitz, and company are. Are they talking today with Taylor Jenkins available? And not with Taylor. I mean, are Joe and Mike talking to one another and be like, hey, what do you think?
I would
say... Or is this a non-starter? Like,
I don't think it's a starter.
Really?
Honestly, I don't know.
So he must not be that good of a coach.
I think he's good. I just think that they're comfortable right now with where they're at and the growth that they've shown this.
It's essentially a franchise tag on Chauncey by doing the right, team option. Right. Now, but what about the Chauncey? Like, is there any part of Chauncey that's like, really?
Yes.
I'm not going to do this with you guys. Like, you're going to just do the team option thing? Clearly, I've warranted more than that. And maybe some of it is, what kind of conversations does Chauncey have with Joe and Jody and Bert and who knows? But does Chauncey get to a place where it's like, you know what? If there's another opening out there, you got to give me permission to go seek that one. Like, kind of like the Phoenix stuff from recently.
And Joe Cronin didn't hire Chauncey Billups.
Right.
Like, Neil Olshey did. But from all accounts, they do have a good relationship, a good working relationship going forward, and a good relationship in general. So I don't think that it's necessarily one of those things where they're looking at it and saying, we need to get somebody new in here at this point. It is a slow build and a slow burn for the Blazers right now. But I think you're right about Chauncey. I don't know that Chauncey necessarily, I think he loves coaching and he's fine coaching here in Portland. He does want to coach a winner at some point.
Well, let me
make that clear.
If it's not Chauncey, what kind of coach would be the best kind of coach for this team?
Well, at that point, it would be more of an X's and O's guy. I think Chauncey's more of a relationship, more about teaching you about the ropes, development type of coach right now. But I also think that Chauncey can be, his best would be when he has a veteran-laden team that he can actually relate with and can tell people what to do, and they might actually respect him and listen. Where Taylor Jenkins, you said he didn't even play in college.
He has to be an X and O's,
right,
you know,
right.
Scheme, data,
he's not
analytics
there
type
to be
of guy.
Relatable. He
is
Who there.
Is he as a coach, by the way? What do people know Taylor Jenkins for from a basketball standpoint?
Just
since he didn't play,
like you said, a good X's and O's guy. Like he will draw up a good offense. He's going to have you play hard defense, and he's going to get after you. He's going to try to, you know, he's going to try to earn that respect by being authoritative over you, because he doesn't have the respect of a Chauncey Billups, who was a Finals MVP. Chauncey can come to you and say something very mild manneredly, and you will listen to him because
he says, "I'm in the Hall of Fame."
I'm in the Hall of Fame. Where Taylor Jenkins is going to have to say, "Look, you have to believe me on this one, bro. Like, trust me, this is going to work." And then these guys still might not listen to him.
I also don't have, you know, it's hard for me. Taylor Jenkins had almost his entire assistant coaching staff turned over on him by the Grizzly front office going into this season. That kind of sucks. It's kind of emasculating in a way. And then he had to run everybody else's. It wasn't even his stuff from what I'm reading.
That's why it's not that surprising that they did fire him.
Right? With 9 games to go.
That's the shocking part. But you know, if they weren't going to fire him 9 games left, they were going to fire him after the season anyways, no matter what happened.
They probably want to give this job to this Lizalo guy. That's the interim. They probably want to give it to him, and they want to see how he does with high-stakes games.
The T-Wolves did this a couple years ago with Chris Finch. They fired their coach. They hired Chris Finch away from Toronto, who was their assistant there. They weren't very good, but then the next couple seasons, you know, you've seen what Minnesota has turned into, a legitimate playoff team. So I think that's what kind of Memphis is thinking. Like, we're going to get out in front of it. We're going to see what this guy can do and get used to his type of system again, because they run the least amount of pick and rolls in the NBA. And that's where Jaw is at his best, is like, you get him downhill with someone to drop coverage. That's where he finishes, right around the key. They're not running pick and rolls for him. Like, they should take the ball out of his hands and they're letting other people make plays. I think that they're kind of going with a style and a philosophy more than the actual talent on the court.
Almost doesn't make much sense for Ja to be there anymore if they're really committing to that philosophy. Grizzlies next head coach odds. Tuomas Lazalo is the favorite, -125, and he is the one that they're tabbing as the interim. This is according to BetOnline AG. So Steve Nash, 3-1. Is next in line. Sam Cassell, 5-1. Damon Stoudemire, 6-1. If I remember right, he played in Memphis for a little bit, obviously to his time in Portland, and is currently the head coach at Georgia Tech. Who else is on this list? Dan Hurley at 16-1. Becky Hammon, Frank Vogel, Stan Van Gundy, Jeff Van Gundy, Mark Jackson, John Calipari. Some interesting names on this list, but I didn't see Terry Stotts wasn't on this list. I wonder about Terry a little bit. Does he have an appetite to become a head coach again in the NBA right now on Steve Kerr's staff? But Taylor Jenkins, he was the 5th longest tenured head coach in the NBA behind Steve Kerr, Mike Malone, Greg Popovich, and Eric Spoelstra, who all obviously have won rings. And now he is on the open market, 40-year-old, bright head coach, successful head coach, but time ran out with Memphis. coming down the stretch, and we'll see if that impacts the Blazers' future or conversations with Chauncey Billups, if at all. Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn in for John Canzano. Deion Sanders got the bag. We'll talk about that and play a little Punch It audio coming up on this one-hour edition of the Bald-Faced Truth on 750 The Game and the BFT Radio Network.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Much of it's been made of Deion Sanders at Colorado. How long was he going to stay there? Well, turns out, for now, he's going to be there for the long term. Colorado giving Deion Sanders a big, big extension. 5 years, $54 million. You scratch out the average to 10.8, just a scotch under Dan Lanning's 11 per year. Puts Coach Prime firmly in the top 10 highest paid coaches in the sport. After winning 4 games his first year, 9 games his second year, 4-way tie for first place in the Big 12 Conference. I loved Kenny Dillingham's reaction at Arizona State, who, by the way, also was in that tie for first in the Big 12 Conference this past year. Won the Big 12 championship game, almost won a game in the college football playoff, and then goes and sees Coach Prime, Inc. for 5 years and $54 million. And nearly $11 million a year. And Coach Dillingham said, congrats to Deion Sanders. Well deserved. Completely turned that program around. Hashtag Big 12. Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn in for John Canzano. Kenny Dillingham probably next in line. Will he be a top 10 highest paid head coach of the sport? We'll see. Timing is everything with this stuff. And you know what, Stephen? Timing is everything with this stuff. How about Dan Lanning getting what he got from Oregon about a month ago, and those were eye-popping numbers. You compare what Dan has done in terms of wins and losses with Oregon to what Deion has done with wins and losses with Colorado, and they're essentially making the same thing. And yet I get it for both sides. What was your reaction?
Are you saying that Dan Lanning should have waited till Deion got paid and then said, hey, here's what Deion's getting. I need this percentage more.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. And Deion may have not gotten 10.8 if it wasn't for Dan's
exactly.
11. So
it is interesting. I thought it was a good move by Colorado. And, you know, Canzano and myself have talked about this numerous times. Like when he got hired by Colorado, we kind of said, all right, well, what's the over-under years at Colorado is he going to beat? And it was kind of set at 2.5, right? Because that's what we thought Shador and Travis Hunter would be there for 2 years. And then as well, is he going to coach anybody else at Colorado? Is he going to leave? I tended to think that he was going to stay. Canzano said he thought he'd probably leave. Well, look, I mean, if he's going to leave now, I think it's going to be a really bad look now. After getting 10 plus million a year and getting a 5-year deal, it looks like Deion's there to stay at least for a little bit. I have no reason to trust why he won it. And if you're Colorado, that's a good signing. If you're Kenny Dillingham, that's a great signing. Cause you know what? You beat that team in that conference and you're a better team in 2 years.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, Kenny and Deion went there at the same time. That's where they started their coaching. 10 years.
Yeah.
There's the word. Ugh. Coaching 10 years, the same exact year. So you look at Kenny Dillingham. Hey, I've won a Big 12 title. I need more than Deion now. So I think it's great for everybody. It's great for college football to keep Deion Sanders there, not the NFL. I think Deion fits what college football is right now with the NIL and transfer portal. Like, he's the perfect guy. He even talks about, like, I'm not going to go out and recruit dudes. Like, I'm not going to their houses. Like, reach out to me in the portal. Let's go. Let's get this thing done and the quick fix. I think Deion's perfect for what it is. We've seen what they've done the last couple seasons and the amount of eyeballs that they're attracting to their teams. It will be interesting. I do find it similar to the Wayne Tinkle thing at Oregon State. Like, he had his kids. He had the assistants' kids. They're really good. Well, now they're gone, right? You're at Jackson State. You brought a lot of those guys over. You had Shador. You had Travis Hunter. Basically, your kids. You had Shiloh. They're all gone now. Like, how do you rebound from there? Now, it seems like they should be fine. They have a lot of good recruits, a lot of good portal guys, but we'll see, man. Sometimes you lose those kids that you've been working with for years and years. The comfortability around them is just a little different. I can't wait to see it. I think they'll be good. I think Deion has them on the right track. I think he's a great hire by Colorado.
Yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of sense for Colorado to do that. I mean, some of the numbers of what Deion's done there in just 2 years is pretty amazing. By the way, he was going to make, or he did make last year, $5.7 million. And it's going from 5.7 from last year to $10 million this year. So a $4.5 million increase in salary year over year after being just halfway through the initial deal that he signed there. The ticket revenue at CU Boulder. How about this? In 2023, Colorado made $31.2 million in ticket revenue. And that is about $20 million more than they made the previous season. So that was Deion's first year. Their ticket revenue essentially jumped $20 million from about $13 million to $31.2 million. So just a tick under $20 million increase for 1 year, let alone what they did in 2024. So it makes a lot of sense for Colorado in the constant fight for relevance in college athletics and college football in general. Deion makes you instantly relevant, almost independent of your winning. But I will hold you to a higher standard if you're making $10.8 million.
Right.
And I want to see if you win, because if you don't, we're going to talk about you being a loser.
Especially in the Big 12, where there's no teams that are head and shoulders above anybody, right? Yeah. Arizona State was picked last in that conference, and they end up winning. Like, I don't think you could argue that Arizona State's much higher than Colorado. Like, you got to perform, and you got to make a college football playoff at some point. I'm not saying that they should have last year, but that contract says, look, you're one of the top teams, one of the top coaches in the nation. You have to perform that way, just like Dan Lanning. Dan Lanning, he got that contract. It's time to put up and put some results in the college football playoff. Not just get there, not win the Big Ten, win a game. You know, make some progress going forward. You know, I think with Deion, after year one to year two, you could say there's definitely a lot of progress. Year three, the progress is like, look, you are legit competing for a Big 12 title, and you're legit competing to get in that college football playoff. That's the way it's got to be.
Well, and you mentioned Dan Lanning, and it's hard to... Anytime I see Deion news, I think about Lanning, and I'm not sure if Dan would welcome that or not, but the fact of the matter is he put himself in the same conversation ballpark as Deion Sanders, and Deion Sanders did the same with Dan Lanning. This goes all the way back to when Deion got into the Pac-12 with Colorado in 2023. I understand they're not in the same conference anymore, but I think Dan Lanning and Deion Sanders are the most talked about coaches in college football now. That's the way it is. And it makes a lot of sense. Now the pressure is on both of them to win and win big. And Dan Lanning's got the head start on Deion, obviously. If Oregon played Colorado today, I think Oregon would win comfortably. And I don't technically know who is playing for Oregon even at the moment. But you go all the way back to September of 2023. This was in the lead up of the Oregon-Colorado game, which was the Ducks' Pac-12 opener that fall.
Yeah, I obviously have to take a deeper dive in it, but you have to be a fool to not recognize the results that they've created on a team that didn't have a lot of success before. So he's done a phenomenal job. He's recruited a lot of players that I'm familiar with personally that are there playing for him. He's got a good roster, and they're winning games, right? And it doesn't always matter how, but they're winning games. So obviously he's doing something right up there.
So that was during the week going into the Colorado game. This was right before the game that went viral from ESPN.
Rooted in substance, not flash. Rooted in substance. Today, we talk with our pads. You talk with your helmet, right? Every moment. The Cinderella story is over, man. Right? They're fighting for clicks. We're fighting for wins. There's a difference, right? There's a difference, right? This game ain't going to be played in Hollywood. It's going to be played on the grass, right? It's going to be played on the grass. And let's go.
Still gets me fired up hearing that. Then Colorado leaves the Pac-12 for the Big 12. Dan Lanning's reaction.
Not a big reaction. I mean, I'm trying to remember what they won to affect this conference. I don't remember. Do you remember them winning anything? I don't remember them winning anything.
You hear all that, Steven, and you don't think that Dan Lanning is motivated by Deion Sanders getting this contract? I think he absolutely is.
Can we get a game between Colorado and Oregon?
A playoff game, please.
If we get something, like, I would need to see that again. But you're right. Like, there's definitely a connection between the two.
Probably nothing personal, but no. Just like they are the most talked about coaches the sport has to offer right
now. They really are, yeah. They're by far probably the two most popular coaches right now, just from a general standpoint, because Dan Lanning is so young and so good at what he's done, and he's very out there, and he's been very honest about where he's looking at jobs and not looking at jobs, and I'm staying in Oregon, and everyone thinks he's leaving, and he's not. And I think that Deion is the same thing. He's been very honest with the media, and just like Dan Lanning is. So, for better or worse, they are kind of compared with with one another as being two of the more popular coaches in all of America. And I think if I'm Dan Lanning, I look at that contract and I'm saying, I mean, I deserve more than that, but you just signed a contract extension. So at what point can you go back and get another one? I don't know. We'll see if who gets fired in the SEC. Can Lanning use that as some more,
leverage.
Leverage. There it is.
It's all about his. I trust him.
I do too.
I think it's his kids and all that.
I don't think Lanning's leaving, but he could definitely do more leverage. Like, look, Deion's getting this. Like, I need to be higher up with the Deion. We crushed them when we played them. We're better than they
are. I'd love to see an Oregon-Colorado game. Now, to Deion's credit, I think he's hired well on his coaching staff the last couple years. His buyout details starts at $12 million in 2025, then $10 million the following year, and then it drops. $6 million in 27, $4 million in 28.
Do you think he's
$3 million
coach?
In 29. Maybe.
I don't. I never saw Deion as an NFL guy. I always saw him more as a college guy that he's more of the rah-rah, like recruiting. I'm going to do that. Where I think in the NFL, it's just so much more of a business.
I would call him a culture setter, right? And if you want a culture setter at your head coach, you can do that. Pete Carroll was a culture setter. Now, Pete Carroll didn't run anything exorbitant on scheme. He ran very simple scheme, but he taught two things: competition above everything else and player empowerment. And when that came to life, Seattle was legendary, or legendary, I should say.
It also caused their downfall where they hated each other, though.
There's a half-life to everything. But if Deion wants a shot, I think he could have a shot. If Jerry is looking at this with Brian Schottenheimer, I mean, look, it's Brian Schottenheimer, right? It's not exactly a type of coach that you say, oh, yeah, he's going to be there 5 years. I mean, that could be a one-year deal.
That's more like, and hey, Deion could be like, ready at Colorado for another year or two that will get you.
So I won't rule out Deion going to the NFL, but I think the price for him to go to the NFL did jump up a little bit, at least in the next year or two, and we'll see in year three or four.
No, I think you're right. I think if he wants to, he can. I just don't know. I think he's a more successful college coach than he would be in the NFL coach.
I agree with that. And this surprised me too, Steven, that he got this success. If you would have asked me when he initially came to Colorado, would you get a second contract at Colorado after Shador and Travis left? I would say no. Absolutely not.
I would have thought he went to another school or the NFL, but I mean, he's always said he's buying into Colorado. He loves it there, and I mean, he's kind of proven it.
And a good season last year. Good season, right? Nine
that
wins.
That definitely helps.
It's a good season.
That he said, yeah, I can win here.
Yeah.
Right? Like, even with Shador and Travis, we're going to have two high first-round picks. I can win here. I can bring in the right guys. We can win the Big 12. That's why he wanted to go to the Big 12, because it was a lot easier over there than it would be in the Pac-12.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm just convinced.
Can you imagine Coach Prime, you know, coaching on an Apple TV media deal?
No, I cannot.
If that would happen. And now they've got a five-star quarterback coming in.
Yep. And they got the Liberty quarterback.
The Liberty quarterback coming in.
Salter, yeah.
So they were already interesting, but I think after this extension, I think they are even more interesting in 2025. And I'm honestly really eager to see what Oregon does in response to it as well.
It also is going to make it so it's more secure for Deion. Like, when you're out recruiting, like, look, I signed a 5-year deal.
He probably was feeling that, right?
Right.
I'm sure he was getting that from portal guys and recruits.
Recruits and parents are saying, well, how long are you going to be there? You're flirting with the Cowboys. No, I'm 5-year deal. Let's build this thing out.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think great move for Rick George in Colorado. Rick George says, this puts us in our rightful place as a national championship contender. Like, all right, Rick, good line, but no one really believes you until you get to the playoff and do some damage there. But Deion getting this bag and this money puts him, I mean, he was already highly scrutinized. He's even going to go to another level, just like Dan Lanning is. I mean, Dan Lanning said it himself. He's like, hey, man, if you want to be able to have people talk about you the way they want, you want them to talk about you, win games. It all comes down to winning in the end. And if you don't win, you leave yourself open for criticism. If you don't win making $11 million a year, you definitely leave yourself open for criticism. Everything's fair now with Deion Sanders at Colorado. Not that it wasn't before, but I think it goes to an even higher level now. And I am fascinated to see if he will deliver the way that he says he can deliver. Time to prove it, Coach Prime. Our big splash and some budget audio coming up on the other side. Judah Doobie, Stephen Vaughn on the Bald-Faced Truth.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
John will be back on Monday. We got Sweet 16 action at the top of the hour from Westwood One. Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn here on the Bald-Faced Truth. Do a little big splash and punch it audio. We don't need to fire the benchmarks at all, but the Deion conversation we were having last segment, Stephen, I don't know if you saw this as well. The NCAA is not going to grant a waiver to Colorado and Syracuse for them to play each other in a spring game this year. Deion Sanders and Fran Brown were trying to do something that college football hasn't seen yet, which was basically play against each other in their spring game. Deion was like, hey, it's a little monotonous to play against your own team in a spring game, but I want to keep playing in the spring game. So they had everything in place. I mean, they agreed to it essentially on social media and all that, but then the NCAA, in a move that to me feels a lot like the NCAA just trying to flex its muscle on Deion, the day that he gets paid $10.8 million a year, the NCAA comes over the top and says, by the way, you need our approval to do this, and we still have oversight over you, Deion Sanders, and we're not going to let you do this.
Not shocking that the NCAA makes this decision, because it's one of those things where it's like, this doesn't matter in the long run, right? Like, having a spring game against one another doesn't really matter. Like, it would have been fun. It would have been cool to watch. But the NCAA, like you said, wants to swing its power that it has and says, look, you know what? We still run things around here. Yep. You can't do this without our permission. I mean, it's just so stupid.
Recruiting advantages, yada, yada.
And to expect the NCAA to make, like, a decision on the fly like that, like, Deion just like, hey, who wants to play? Syracuse? Yeah, cool. NCAA make a decision? Yeah, they're not going to say yes to any of this. They can't make a decision in years.
I think Deion, though, if anybody could, I think Deion eventually will try to find his way to czardom in college sports. Maybe he'll be the next czar of the sport.
Yeah, that would be kind of a sick czar.
Exactly. I think he could do it. Meanwhile, NFL, who's going to be the Browns quarterback? Well, little fun rumor out there about one Kirk D. Cousins, Jason Fitz. Why would Kirk Cousins be the next Browns quarterback?
Kirk Cousins was spotted at a Chipotle in Westlake, Ohio. Now, I'll say this. I don't know. I was at Disney World, I think it was two summers ago, and I was walking through, and there was Kirk Cousins walking through Disney World. It didn't suddenly mean that he was going to sign with the team in Florida, but when you're in Westlake, Ohio, suddenly we see Kirk Cousins there, and all of a sudden it becomes immediately that he's going to be the Browns quarterback.
That's great. You could show up at a Chipotle. You might be that team's next NFL quarterback.
Do we know if that Chipotle is like extra good or something?
I don't know. But Kirk, the athletes love Chipotle. It's crazy. Like all the college athletes, pro athletes, they love going to Chipotle. For as good as it is, it's not that good. It's just like, I don't know. They love the stuff that you could smack in a burrito.
Isn't it just like the fake healthy stuff?
It is kind of fake healthy, yeah. Like By the way, though, sneaky, affordable, like for as expensive as things are,
yeah.
The chicken burrito is $8.75.
I had Chipotle today.
Yeah, what's your meat?
I go chicken guy.
Yeah, chicken, and that's the cheapest one for me, and that's like really good value these days. $8.75 for a chicken burrito?
You like going burrito or you go bowl?
Well, it depends. Sometimes, yeah, it's about 50-50 right now.
Yeah.
But no guac.
You ever go hard shell tacos?
Never tried those. Mm.
They got some decent hard shell tacos.
Okay, I'm going to have to check that out. We did birria tacos the other day that were just a taco... I think it might be undefeated.
Tacos are incredible. My son asked me this question the other day. It was about pizza or burrito or pizza or burgers, but tacos the same thing. He asked, would you rather have an $8 million pizza or $8 million burger? And I said burger because I feel like you could elevate the burger rather more than you could elevate the pizza. Like if you're going $8 million, but I feel like tacos on the same level as a burger. Like you can really elevate that to make it incredible.
Yeah. Burgers, pizza, and tacos. Approaching 4 o'clock on a Friday, I have got to eat something right after the show. Last night, Alabama just looked almost unbeatable against BYU. Jay Williams, Duke legend. Is he worried about this matchup tomorrow, Alabama and Duke?
I'm really worried about this game because the way Alabama plays is just unorthodox. There is no team in college basketball, with the exception of maybe BYU, but Alabama, look, the way they play last night, they play this style of game better. They space the floor, they shoot a ton of threes, and the way Mark Sears plays, Seth and I were going about this, whether people want to compare him to Jalen Brunson or Fred VanVleet, I don't think he's either one. He bullies his way to the bucket. He's about 5'10", 5'11", but it seems like he's 220 pounds, bullies his way to the bucket, and they space you out with Grant Nelson. And I think Duke has the size and length, Seth, but if they get out in transition, if you don't guard them the way Auburn did the first matchup, this is the game that they can score 115 points. It's that easy for them.
So, honestly, if Alabama plays like they did last night, I think they're going to win it all. It's just a matter of whether or not they make 23s, which is crazy. I mean, how are you going to stop that?
Yeah, it's a tough matchup for sure if Alabama's hitting shots, and I think Jay Williams is a little nervous for his little Dukey Blue Devils there.
You should be.
And I'm rooting for Bama, man. Go away, Duke.
All right. Well, okay, who are your picks tonight? I'm going to take Michigan State over Ole Miss. What's your pick?
Yeah, I'll take Michigan State as well.
Kentucky, Tennessee. I'll go the Vols only because I don't like Kentucky.
I'm going Kentucky in this one.
All right. I think Auburn will do okay with Michigan here. Big spread there, 8.5.
I do too. I think it'll be closer. I think Michigan covers, but I'm going to take Auburn.
Houston's my national champion, so obviously I have them over Purdue.
I got Houston as well. I think this one sneaky as well, because if Houston goes through that scoring stretch where they don't score, that could be problemsome, but I think Houston wins.
Your Saturday Elite Eight games are both 6.5-point spreads, Florida over Texas Tech and Duke over Bama. You want to take Bama?
I'm taking dogs. I'm taking both dogs.
Whoa, dogs are barking. Texas Tech to the Final Four is Steven's pick. I can't blame you there. You are on Texas Tech and Maryland, one of those teams beating Florida on their way to the Final Four. So that checks out. All right, Sweet 16 coverage coming up. We'll talk to you again next week, 3 to 6, right here on the Bald-Faced Truth.